Before I read, I would like to say a little bit about the sacrament session as far as time is concerned. Those who were with me this morning, we talked about the concept of the left and right brain orientation and how we do things the way we do them, dealing out of the left side of our brain, which is process, and dealing out of the right side of our brain, which is creative, and then bringing them both into balance. And we did that balancing act by doing an art project and creating a design on a piece of graph paper. And for those of you who missed that session, it would be good to try that, and I can talk you through it. And for those who did do it, don't have to do it again, although if you want to continue to play with the design concept, that's fine. The second project will be dealing with a circle and four lines to create a design image. Again, developing the power of the left side, the thinking side, with the creative side of the brain to pull creativity out of us and to bring us into new alignment with wholeness. So in the process of talking through moods and my little charts, then we can move on into doing some art process. I would like to read from the 37th chapter of Ezekiel, talking about the dry bones. The power of the Lord was upon me, and I was carried away by the Spirit of the Lord to a valley full of old dry bones that were scattered everywhere across the ground. He led me around amongst them, and then he said to me, "Son of dust, can these bones become people again?" I replied, "Lord, you alone know the answer to that." Then he told me to speak to the bones and say, "O dry bones, listen to the words of God, for the Lord God says, see, I am going to make you live and breathe again. I will replace the flesh and muscles on you and cover you with skin. I will put breath into you, and you shall live and know I am the Lord." So I spoke these words from God, just as he told me to, and suddenly there was a rattling noise from all across the valley, and the bones of each body came together and attached to each other as they used to be. Then, as I watched, the muscles and flesh formed over the bones, and skin covered them, but the bodies had no breath. Then he told me to call to the wind and say, "The Lord God says, come from the four winds, O Spirit, and breathe upon these slain bodies, that they may live again." So I spoke to the winds as he commanded me, and the bodies again began breathing. They lived, stood up, a very great army. Then he told me what the vision meant. "These bones," he said, "represent all the people of Israel. They say, we have become a heap of dried out bones. All hope is gone. But tell them, the Lord God says, my people, I will open your graves of exile and cause you to rise again and return to the land of Israel. And then at last, O my people, you will know I am the Lord. I will put my spirit into you, and you shall live and return home again to your own land. Then you will know that I, the Lord, have done just what I have promised you." It used to confuse me a lot about the whole idea of dry bones. I had no real visual concept until recently, when I began playing with the whole idea of the concept of moods. And I might say, before I go much further, that this is really experiential, the kinds of feelings that I've had about my own moods. I've actually visualized them in the concept of their development and their finish. And the charts reflect that. And that this is a male model and can be reversed to reflect a female model. But the combination of male and female comes into play in both. So, the whole idea about dry bones is that we are being put back together, and in some of that dry boneness, we are putting our own selves together, that we are putting muscles upon ourselves, that we are enfleshing ourselves, that we are standing up and being accountable, and that as all people together, that we can become creative, whether it's in an individual sense or whether it is in community. And certainly enough of that happens here at Holden Village. The community works with the kinds of things that you give to that whole sense of community without losing the identity of the creative person as self. I would like to read from a book by Rollo May called The Courage to Create, a small book, but really very refreshing, calling us to the whole idea of the types of courage in the creative process. And I'm not going to read them all, but he talks about physical courage, moral courage, social courage, and of course, artistic courage. And I would like to read from that creative courage that he speaks about. But those who present directly and immediately the new forms and symbols are the artists, the dramatists, the musicians, the painters, the dancers, the poets, and those poets of the religious sphere we call saints. They portray the new symbols in the form of images, poetic, plastic, or dramatic, as the case may be. They live out their imaginations. The symbols only dreamt about by most human beings are expressed in graphic form by the artists. But in our appreciation of the created work, let us say a Mozart quintet, we also are performing a creative art. When you engage a painting, which we have to do especially with modern art if we are authentically to see it, we are experiencing some new moment of sensibility. Some new vision is triggered in us by our contact with the painting. Something unique is born in us. The concept that it's the artist that is being called out into the new world, into the new vision of world, into the future, is an overview. I have a statement on one of the placards that I put up in the other room that it's not the engineer or the politician. It's the artist in each of us that will come to terms with the world of the future, to deal with problems personally, to deal with problems socially within a wider context of the world. And that as the world becomes smaller and the pressure is greater, that it's going to call for a greater amount of the artist in each one of us to come to terms with the concept of the problems of the world. I also mentioned briefly that in God's wisdom, sending Jesus to the world, the concept that the people were waiting for the Messiah to take care of the problems of the world, that they had to just kick back and assume that Jesus was going to be the leader and that they didn't have to take responsibility for their own conduct in that particularly. Jesus came, though, to stir up. He came as the artist to challenge, to give people their own giftedness to solve some of their own problems. And of course, the Pharisees and the Sadducees recognized that right away and they didn't want anything of that and began plotting immediately to get rid of Jesus because he was the true artist. And the artist can see through the facade of civilization and know automatically what the problems are, can identify them quickly, can resolve some of them, and can cause a stirring effect within the basic structure of society. And for most countries that are oppressed today, even in this country, it's the artist that's killed off first. Any great cartoonist can rip with deft swiftness. The politics and the economy of the time are not appreciated by the economists and the politicians of the time because they are seeing through the very mask that these people are trying to hold up. So it takes tremendous courage to be creative, but Rollo May calls us to that task. We shall surely have to create with others. But if you do not express your own original ideas, if you do not listen to your own being, you will have betrayed yourself. Also, you will have betrayed your community in failing to make your contribution to the whole. So it's an individual responsibility, and it's also a corporate responsibility to be creative and to find your true nature. Okay, what's that got to do with moods? Well, I've set up a little scenario here that I would like to play out with you. And again, let me say that this is truly an experiential sense of what I have gone through in dealing with my own moods. And once I had identified the problem, I drew them out visually, as any true artist will have to do anyway, because visual people see things spatially. And this is one way for me to make it easier for you to understand what I'm talking about. Moods tell us, in my theorizing, moods tell us that there's something wrong. There's not necessarily something wrong with you. It's just that the mood is telling you that there is something wrong. There's something that needs to be changed. There's something in the way of action that you need to perform to improve the quality of your own life or the quality of the life of those people around you. So it's something that is very helpful. It's not something that should be put down or ridiculed or given medicine for or put people in hospitals for if it's the type of mood that can be worked through by the individual person. And that's what I've done for myself without having to do the other extenuated situations. Now, I'm not saying that all moods are a working out situation. Some moods lead to depression, lead to psychosis, lead to neurosis, and are an actual problem. But again, the body structure, the inner core of us, is telling us something needs to move, a block needs to be gotten around, a problem needs to be solved, and that we can grow into new and richer life by looking at our own selves. So what is happening is we're turning from our extroverted self to our introverted self and going down inside to face the unconscious and not stay outside on the surface, not wanting to do that. But what does our society do? Our society says, no, don't look at your moods. Don't face the reality of the inner self. Stay focused on what is reality on the outside. So what the world doesn't want us to look at necessarily is our mood, our daydreaming, we tend to face our moods by saying we're not feeling well today. People tend to look at daydreaming as a waste of time. I have to be very careful in the classroom in which I teach not to ridicule students for daydreaming to a certain extent, although that can be an excuse for not doing anything. Society says that fantasies basically are dirty, that they have sexual overtones, that they lead to all kinds of other misfortunes, that our night dreaming is simply something that takes over while we are not conscious of ourselves in the real world. And that playfulness is a waste of time. But all of these qualities can be looked at very carefully and be made useful instruments of creativity. There's nothing wrong with daydreaming as long as we are managing pretty much our activities. Fantasies have a place in the creative world. And so does night dreaming. When we go to sleep at night, the unconscious movie theater takes over and plays out our lives and some of the past events, some of our emotional outlets, and some of the future thinking can be worked out in night dreaming. And of course, our playfulness is getting away from the humdrum and the craziness of the activities of our daily lives. So all of these have a very definite place in the structure of our lives. And I'm just going to spend some time on the idea of mood. Now this, when I talk about mood, it's the kind of thing that that as I experienced mood, it would come upon me without any particular reason, or at least I thought it came upon me without any particular reason. And I had to analyze what started me sending me down into a mood pattern that took me out of myself and took me into the inside world. Because it was very stressful on my family, as I would go into a mood, that I would simply blank out, that I was not responsible, that people would talk to me, that people would move about me, and I would be oblivious to their presence at all, as I would go into a mood structure. The kind of thing that would set it off for me was that I had to draw a figure out to determine what my life structure was like, and whether I placed myself as the central focus of my life here, or whether there was some attachment to church or Christ. Still, from that central self, things spun out around me in my daily life. For instance, there were various activities that I would be involved in, as most of you are. There was family structure and interacting of the dynamics of that. There was relationships with people that we are all responsible to. There are the church activities that is happening all of the time. Sports or other leisure activities seem to fill up a lot of the spaces of my life. But the great portion of my life was centered around my job. Being a teacher, I was responsible for students, for administrative duties. There 5 days a week, for most of the year, except for the summer. And I took my job very seriously. So that was the beginning of the understanding of what was going to happen in my life as far as moods and patterns were concerned. So I jammed most of the pie of my life surrounded my job. Now, if my job went well, everything was fine. Everything within the family and all the other activities went really well. However, if my job went bad, then my whole life went bad. And it wouldn't take much to set me off if something went wrong at my job. I hadn't learned to balance the other pieces of pie and make them a bigger share of my life. And it wouldn't necessarily have to be a job, it could be some other activity. If I gave it an unequal amount of the size of my pie, if something went wrong in that relationship, then I would begin to develop a mood pattern. So the scenario would go something like this. I knew that something was not going well at the job, and I was not sure what it was. Perhaps I couldn't teach a class I really thought I wanted to teach because I had some ideas that would really give the class some life and some wholeness. Or if I was stuck in a job, the same types of classes year after year, then there would become a problem with predictability. Predictability would lead to boredom. Boredom would lead to a problem of isolation. And then I would develop low self-esteem. And then I would feel an institutionalized feeling that I'm going to be teaching this the rest of my life. There's no way of escaping it. And I would suddenly then drop into a mood pattern. But the mood pattern was the development of making the cure become alive. Because going into a mood pattern is you dip down and try and deal with the kinds of things that you need to. What is really happening is that you're becoming aware of your inner creativity. And it takes that slide. You get in this little car and you go down into yourself and you slide down into that creative pool that you have there. And you become immersed in the activities of trying to find an answer within, because I was aware that there is no answers on the outside. So I had to find a creative way to resolve the issue, to come up with an answer, so that I could make my job better and space out these activities of the rest of my life and find balance and a sense of maturity. So So here's what would happen as I would slide into my mood. On the outward, these are the external pressures that that we all have in some way or another in our lives that press in on us from time to time. So the outward behavior was one, I would suddenly become isolated. I would become very introverted. I would not communicate. People thought I was very aloof. I would start a brooding surface quality, and that I would essentially become very lifeless. That was the outward sign of my mood, as other people would see me. It was as somebody put a mask over me. I became a different person. Underneath that, the inward feelings would take several stages of dropping down to the bottom of my mood pattern, and then a number of stages to bring me back out. So my inward feelings were at stage one. There'd be this sudden and unexplained quiet. I couldn't understand what was happening, what was taking place. I couldn't even describe it as being a mood itself. So that would be the first stage. Then I would drop down into a second stage, which begins to getting a little bit more scary, is there is a loss of identity as to personhood. And in that loss of identity, I would simply sit and become immobilized. Then I would drop down to the third stage, and I'd have a sense of powerlessness, a loss of hope, and despair would take part of who I was. At this point, I would become nonverbal. Now, you probably think that this is fairly serious, but let me say that in the mood structure, that maybe this pattern would run for maybe a day or 2 days at the longest. And once I went through the process at the end of the 2 days, it would not strike me again until some major event would become evident, whether it was in the job or the other activities of my life. So it was, in a way, it was my method of looking at moods as being a way of problem solving. But the great damage was to the people who were on the outside, those people who were out there, family, friends, who would suddenly see me go into a mood. And of course, you know, as an artist, they'd like to make great light of saying, oh, you know those artist types, they're always pretty moody. But I would confess, or not confess, but I would like to say that I think all of us go into some type of pattern behavior such as this in some form or another. Once I was in the bottom of my mood, which might be halfway through a day or halfway through 2 days, then I would begin to feel sorry for myself. But that was the initial stage of coming out, or the beginning of coming out of a mood. Feeling sorry for myself. Oh, geez, I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, this job is terrible. I just feel so crappy. And it's maybe I need another job. You know, this is just really terrible and blah, blah, blah. But at least I was reacting to myself. I was trying to rally myself and pull myself out of this bottom stage here, because this is really a dangerous place to be down here. So feeling sorry for myself was the beginning of coming out of that low powerlessness and area of despair. I was rallying myself. Feeling sorry for oneself is the beginning of help, self-help inside. And then as I felt more and more sorry for myself, then I'd just get downright mad at myself. I'd say, God, that's not terrible. I don't want to be this negative. I'm usually a pretty up guy. But the anger, constructive anger, is very helpful. It produces energy inside the system to push you up and out of a mood structure by just simply getting angry. As long as you don't get stuck in the angry stage, can move through this and get out of this. There are a lot of people who are very angry about a lot of things that happen in their lives. So being angry for feeling sorry at yourself and saying, I need to get out of this. So you push yourself and you can break through the surface as I would do, I would break through this uncommunicative, aloof, brooding, lifeless surface quality that I had and push myself out. I would find that there was periodically new life, that there was new harmony, that I found some creativity, and that I could be open and communicative again. So that was the scenario for me as to what moods would do. Now, the underlying structure of all of that is what's going on. What's the purpose of this? In John Sanford's books, Invisible Partners, he talks a lot about the blending of the masculine and the feminine, the anima and the animus, the coming together of, for my case, there's a lot of masculinity in me, but there's also a lot of feminine. There's a lot of the feminine in me. And the boldness and the strength of the masculine blended with the feminine, which then pulls together, can then pick up the underlying creativity or the blending of the creativity and pull it toward the surface. So what was going on down here in these stages down in the lower sections right down here was that my strong masculine, and in this particular society we're told to be tough guys and be men and let's play sports and go fishing and talk about the weather, but let's not talk about anything that's really sensitive and meaningful. My strong masculine would be pulled under the surface down to a point where my feminine, the anima and the animus, would then come together. Now, as they came together, I would purposely be fighting because I didn't necessarily, on an unconscious level, want to identify with my feminine. That wasn't okay. Society says, that's not okay, can't do that. So there'd be a point of conflict at this stage right in here, at the powerless stage, in which this was given license to join together, have a little bumpiness until the union was made, and then begin to pull up with through the stages of feeling sorry for myself and through anger so that I could break the surface again and live a more fully alive and creative life. So down in this area of the masculine and feminine identity, right in here, is the point of juncture where the creative process is taking place in the unconscious. And as they join together, there is something there within me that is an answer. There's some little answer pulling together that I couldn't answer up here. And then it becomes up and it surfaces and pulls me out. Now, before I figured this all out, the only problem with this one was that I didn't recognize any of this. I'd come out of here and for a few weeks I'd be fine and then boom, I'm right back down into it again. I'd do something new, I'd do something creative, I'd whip out a new painting or a drawing, I'd find an answer for a problem at school, figure out a couple other things over here, and boom, pretty soon I'm right back down into the process once again. So, before I go any further, is anybody identify with this process somewhat? Yes, no, maybe.
I do.
You can work on an emotion as being an act of creativity. In fact, it's very healthy to do that. I had to, on my last degree work, I had to go and do St. Ignatius of Loyola retreat experiences. They were silent fasting retreats. And one of them I had to work on four emotions. And you had to do it very carefully with a spiritual director and a priest nearby, because when you recognize an emotion and you deal with it, it's powerful. And you need somebody around there to help you. One of them was anger. Another one was loneliness. Another one was fear. And the last one was alienation. We had to try to identify what it looked like, if it had a physical presence, and try and talk to it. What did it say? And for all the emotions, first of all, they try and scare you to death because they don't want to be recognized, because the emotion wants to be more in control of you rather than you in guidance with it. So if you don't deal with it, if you don't come to terms with it, it probably could be in control of you, and you may be affected by that particular anger. Certainly. You could wrestle with despair or feeling sorry for yourself or for anger. Any emotion that you can come to terms with is very creative and life-giving.
What does this, I'm just wondering if, it strikes me as a predominantly male pattern, and I think you said that, certainly not confined in there, but I wonder how that would play out differently for women, or what experience of women here are, if you have any thoughts about that, or what? Same thing?
For me, it would. What do you mean by turning around exactly?
Well, this is my model.
Right.
Well, for instance, for you, you might identify this one as being feminine and that this one would be masculine. Mm-hmm. So make it a female model. Don't rely on it as a male model, because that's simply mine. You can adapt this any way you want to. Because it's the kind of things I've been saying in the last two sessions is, these are things that are not, they're not matter of fact, and they're not rigid, they're not yes or no statements. We're looking more at the gray area of things. And if something here sounds like it's for you, make it yours. Or adapt it so that it becomes something that you can use. Okay, the second response to moods was, after a period of time when I began to really think consciously, you know, these moods are really something else. What is it about that I need to watch? So then I began to study, when I would go into a mood, then I would watch carefully, first of all, what happened to me in the first model. But in the second paradigm that I put up, this is the difference or the change. Maybe I better put the first one back up below it so you can see the difference.
Can you see okay over there, Carl? I can make room for you along here.
The change became one of changing not only the outward behavior but the inward feeling structure. If I felt a mood coming on through some kind of life external pressure, I would go into a period of quietness, and that was the catch to stall out so that I didn't drop down into this period of despair. If I would feel a certain quietness coming on, that would automatically tell me that, oh my goodness, I think I'm coming into a mood, you know? Then I would say to myself, and this is important too, it's okay. It's okay to feel this way. You know, a lot of people that I counsel, they don't want to feel their feelings. They think it's wrong to feel their feelings. They want to deny their feelings. And it's like kind of like the contact ad that was on TV for a while. The little pill that you pull apart and all the little things fall out. You take a contact because you haven't got time for the pain. And that's a lot of what life is about in the reality of our society. I went through a divorce 3.5 years ago, and I went around feeling my feelings for about a year. And my principal, who's really a very good principal, but he's big on PR. He likes people to be happy. And he called me into his office one day, and he said, "Mike, we've just noticed that you've been down, and you're usually such an up guy, and you're so important to the staff, and we want you to feel good and be up and be positive." And I said, "Hold it." He said, "I've got to feel my feelings." And that scared him. Because if we feel our feelings, that means somebody else has to feel their feelings. And they don't want to do that. So, it's okay to feel your feelings. It's okay to rest in your mess. It's okay to deal with anger. It's okay to be angry as long as it's constructive. It's okay to feel loneliness because that's part of life. Half of life is joy and the other half is pain, and that's just life. And if we're going to live life to its fullest, we have to feel our feelings. So here I am, I'm into my quietness, and I'm thinking, could be a mood coming on here. Let's play this out a little bit. In that particular stage of quietness and recognizing my behavior, I would drop down to the second level, but then I would be in a period in which I would try to identify the problem or the thing that is bothering me and how I might be constructive and coming up with an answer. Now this period is a little bit longer in my estimation. It wasn't quite so short here because I'd be hanging in there. I'd just say, well, you know, what's going on in here down underneath? What is the problem? So I'd go back and do some homework. I'd rest in this particular place for a while. If something came, fine. If something didn't, I'd say it's okay. You know, there's something going on there, and it'll come out. I would drop up to stage three. I would struggle with this for a while, work on it, and then I would have an easier time of coming into new life and new understanding. Now, the difference here is, at the end, instead of rising up over here and then dropping back and down into a mood a month or several weeks later, I would raise up to a new creative level, and I would stay there. Now, that's not to say that I wouldn't come into a mood pattern again, but understanding the mood pattern, understanding that something new is coming out of that and paying attention to it, then I'm up here on the next level. And even if I drop down into a mood, it's a higher mood level than the previous one. So that you're always sort of in an upward plane. And that in itself is creative. And what you pull out of that is even more. That's gravy on top of the potatoes, that's icing on top of the cake, that's sprinkles on top of your ice cream, whatever your favorite dessert is.
Just trying to put together the gravy and the ice cream.
Yeah. What did I say? Gravy and ice cream?
Okay.
Several foods kind of ran together.
Oh, did they? Oh.
Smorgasbord.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, and the difference on the underground level is one of not fighting so much between my masculine and my feminine. And the whole issue of love comes in here at this point. That once we make more of a peaceful transition in here, it's a smoother transition. We can flow up easier and be easier on ourselves in the transition. Now I say the whole idea of love comes in because I just read from Rollo May's book, and his brother, Gerald May, is also a psychotherapist, and he's come up with terms of the four loves, much like C.S. Lewis has. And of course, the first one is narcissistic. Help me, folks. See? Is that close?
Yeah.
Okay. Narcissistic and then erotic. Filial love, which is compassion. And then agape. Or agape. Sure, you prefer. Okay. These two are the culprits right here that keep us stuck right in here. Because if we're involved in the self-love or the love that involves two people and the world is blanked out, it's very hard for us to tie in ourselves and make our own love identity, to be in love with ourselves. And that requires more of the compassionate love. This requires self-compassion here. Understanding self. And it's very important if we're going to get beyond into a new creative self. And the most difficult one, according to Gerald May,
is the balancing act between the compassionate love and into the full love of agape, which is love of all creation. And that's what we're about here. We're working through ourselves into a new identity, coming out in compassion for ourselves, compassion and love for the world. And that continues on a plane that just keeps on going. But it demands a lot of understanding of self before that kind of activity can take place. And it's a kind of transformation that takes a lifelong process. So, in the understanding of moods, these kinds of patterns are going to continue to flow up and down, up and down, up and down, as we learn to love more of ourselves, as we understand more of the concept that we are total whole beings blending the masculine and feminine together. Now, in my understanding, and let me tell you what's happened to my own life, in understanding and going from this process into a new process, my own creativity as an artist has changed drastically. I'm doing paintings now that almost bring me to tears. I wish I had some pieces here, would have fit in. But I've looked over the cross-section of my own, I've kept a slide collection of my work because I exhibit. And over the process of 10 years, my work has changed from hard-edged pieces to more soft-flowing pieces to I'm doing large paintings and acrylics of objects that reflect in water, waterfalls, running rivers, because water is one of those archetypal images that is of the creative spirit within us. And water is certainly an important element in creativity and also into the church life, the importance of water. So coming to terms with my own masculine and feminine deep within inside me, I've become a more responsive, I'm better in communication skills, and it's much easier for me to grow as an individual. So that is the process of moods and how it can reach down inside of us and pull out the idea of creative energy. And creative energy for what? It could be an artistic form. It does not have to be an artistic form. So it can be in other areas of your life. Whatever energizes you and brings you into the fullness of your own life, that's the creative spark and energy that is deep within you. Now, understand we'll have a break for 20 minutes or so.
If you want to do it now, yeah, whatever.
Okay.
The midpoint would be free, I guess. But,
okay, well, there's...
If this is a better break point for you.
Yeah. I would like to set up two exercises for you that you can work on. One was based on the left-right brain assessment. And if you wish, I know some of you have already taken that. If you wish, I could give you that left and right brain assessment. It's fascinating. I mean, didn't you find it interesting?
Yeah.
I don't want to. Didn't you find it interesting?
Yeah.
Because what the first project is based directly on the left and right brain use of your own. There are some things I want you to do that are restricted and other things I want you to do that are creative and that are in direct relationship to your brain function orientation for each one of you. So we can do that when we come back. Then I'll give you the two assignments that I just let you go on your own. I'm going to give you paper and I've got special pens that you can use that are different colors and let you experiment on your own. And I'm giving you, first of all, to identify what is it about my left and right brain functioning, and secondly, how can an art project make me a creative thinker? The assignments are not meant to make you artists. They're meant to make you creative in your thinking, processing, and so forth. Because there's going to be ideas come up that you create that you didn't think were possible. You'll be working over here and the answer is back there, and as you turn around, there it is, and you go, oh my gosh, look at that happened here.